the opening words. The following quote is by Albert Einstein. I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious. I will now have our chalice lighted. To the words of Kristen Schmidt and Alex Capers, we light this chalice for our children and our And this morning we are happy to have Holly Tellender. She, hers holds a bachelor's degree in elementary education and a master's degree in bilingual and multicultural education. She has worked for more than 15 years with learners of all ages. She is especially passionate about helping learners develop their executive functioning skills and embodied learning practices through a trauma-informed and inclusive lens. Learning happens naturally and is most powerful when experienced through connection with others. This presentation, Everyone's a Teacher, 10 Daily Practices to Support Learners in Your Life, will explore holistic approaches to learning and provide practical tips and tools for adults to support their own learning process and the learning experiences of the youth in their lives. And here is Holly.
So thank you for that introduction. Most of you know me, some of you may not. I'm the director of religious education here, and it's funny because Facebook just reminded me on the 22nd that it was that was the 5th year anniversary of the day I accepted the job.
Oh, wow. Yay.
Congratulations.
Yeah, just starting on round 6. I was one of those people who came out of teaching school like this, you know, so excited to get into a classroom and help people learn. As the oldest of 4 children and all the cousins, I always enjoyed teaching people things, even when they didn't particularly want to learn whatever it was that I felt like they needed to learn. So becoming a teacher really was in line with who I am as a person. Pretty early on in my school career as a teacher, I realized that we could be doing more as an education system as a whole to really support individual learners. And in the course of my career, I was in the classroom for 12 years and I left the classroom. Some of you may know I have my own business on the side as an academic coach and consultant, so I work with a lot of kids. And over the years, what I've realized is it really comes down to executive functioning. And so I want to talk a little bit today about what executive functioning is, and then give you some tips and tricks for maybe improving your own executive functioning, but also ways to interact with kids in a way that might make a difference to them. Because the reality is that they aren't going to get everything they need in a classroom from one teacher. And they are going to need diverse experiences with a multitude of adults in order to really develop these essential skills. So if we're going to make the assumption that everyone is a teacher, and I think that's a great assumption to begin with, then we need to really have a solid understanding of how learning happens. So let's start with the brain. So if you look at this picture of the brain, this is called the triune brain model, and very brief, I mean, I could talk about this for hours, this is something I can really nerd out on, but very essentially, the brain develops from the inside out, okay? So as an infant, we're really most concerned with safety, right? And how, if our environment is safe, there's a lot of information we can talk about attachment theory, how do we attach to our primary caregivers, is our environment safe, are our needs met? And the essential question when the brainstem is the main system on board is, am I safe? Okay. Then next up, we come into the limbic system, and this is a very broad overview, so if there's any neurologists in here, please be kind. I'm just giving you a broad view of this. I only have, what, 20 minutes. So the next system is the limbic system, and that is the where a lot of the emotional centers of the brain, a lot of emotional processes are taking place. And the essential question when the emotional state of the limbic system is online is, am I loved? And once those areas take hold, then beginning around puberty, well, beginning at birth, we begin to build the framework for healthy executive functioning, but especially around puberty, the brain begins to actively wire the frontal lobe, the prefrontal cortex, and begin to make connections between how to be organized, how to manage impulses, how to plan, how to prioritize, these kinds of things. I mean, everybody knows a teenager, right? They can never find their backpack, and they don't know what their homework is, and they don't have any idea when that math test is. Maybe tomorrow, I don't know. And it drives us insane. They come by it naturally, and they really need your help, because in those years from around the onset of puberty to 25, their executive, their prefrontal cortex, their neocortex, is literally wiring itself like a house is wired for electricity, okay? And I think a lot of times, as parents and educators especially, we make a lot of assumptions about what they should be able to do independently, and a lot of that is built into the way that maybe we were raised, right? If we just are hard enough on them, if we give them enough consequences, if we really are clear about our expectations, then they'll pull it together. The reality is they need lots and lots of support and scaffolding in order to pull that together, and that's what we're gonna talk about today. So that's an example of how the brain, a broad overview of how the brain processes learning. You cannot learn anything until you feel safe. You cannot learn anything until you feel loved and accepted. And you can't learn anything until you have the skills in place to be able to go through these processes in an organized and logical way that makes sense to you and values who you are as a learner. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the executive functioning skills are the mental processes by which we manage our learning and progress. They are the skills that allow us to make plans, juggle multiple tasks, remember important information, engage with challenging materials and people, and focus attention. And the development of the executive functioning skills starts at birth. Has anybody ever played Peekaboo? Okay, Peekaboo is a game that builds executive functioning. It helps a kid with their working memory. Okay. Researchers have kind of grouped executive functioning into three main categories. There are lots of skills in each category, but these three main categories are really the ones you want to keep in mind. Working memory, the ability to remember things. Peekaboo is a working memory game, right? Look, I'm not there, I'm here again. Not there, I'm here again, right? Putting things behind your back, bringing them back out. working memory, inhibitory control. Who has not met a child with some inhibitory control? That is important in toddlerhood and younger ages. That looks like not hitting, right? When you're frustrated, not biting, not screaming. In teenagers, that looks like stopping at the stop sign, okay, and putting on your turn signal and saying no when your friends are doing something that's chancy and risky and goes against your moral code, right? So, like I said, these things begin at birth and really have to build pretty consistently and with a lot of adult support in order to reach maximum effectiveness. And the last one is cognitive flexibility. And cognitive flexibility is, for an example, would be like there are certain rules at school and there are different rules at home, right? When I play this game, the hearts are trump. When I play this game, there's no such thing as trump, right? Games are a huge bonus to building all three of those. So if you have a family habit of playing games, any kind of game, you are addressing all of those at an age-appropriate way in a way that's fun and does not feel like learning. So I guess if you take nothing away from this, instituting a weekly game night with a kid in your life is you are making a huge investment in their brain capacity. And we know that kids learn best through fun. So If you don't know of any cool games, if all you can think of is Monopoly, come and talk to me. We play a lot of games in our family, and there are amazing games out there. Card games. How many of you played card games with your family as a kid? Hearts, Euchre, Canasta. We're not just talking about executive functioning skills there. We're also talking about math and language and all kinds of stuff. So if nothing else, take that away. Playing games with kids is an amazing, amazing way to support their brain development. The Center for the Developing Child at Harvard University, I found this so interesting as a teacher, has now determined that proficiency in those three areas or support in those three areas is more important to school readiness than reading or number skills. Think about it. A kid who comes into a kindergarten classroom cannot learn anything if they can't stop themselves from hitting their neighbor, if they can't follow the directions of go to your cubby, get your folder, put it in your backpack, and sit down, right? Teenagers, they work in memory. The math test is now not on Tuesday, it's on Monday, right? All of those things are vital no matter what age you're at, but they are exceptionally vital in the early years. Okay, this is a big reason why I left the classroom, because I think that learning is social justice. And what we know about cognitive functioning, executive functioning development is that at-risk populations are even more at risk for not having developed solid executive functioning. Things like poverty, food scarcity, trauma, systems of societal oppression, those all affect whether or not a child's executive functioning and cognitive development will progress naturally and healthfully, right? So in particular, if you have access to children who might be in some of these systems in which they deal with societal oppression, you can make a real impact by just engaging with them and maybe going through some of the 10 tips that I am eventually going to get to. The other thing is, the brain is an amazingly plastic organ. Okay, even 30 years ago, the common thinking was that brain development stopped at birth. And then later we realized that maybe it stops at age 5. If you remember in the 90s, there was this big push for read to your children. That was in part because we thought at the time that 5 was a major cutoff in terms of how brain development. Well, we better cram it all in there before 5, right? Because there's no going back after that, you know? They're set. But now we know that it continues all through life, okay? Especially in those teenage years. So when we're talking about prefrontal cortex, and all of you are still have neuroplasticity. There's no reason to, and none of you got some, none of us got targeted executive functioning support because that wasn't a thing when we were in school. But, and we sort of relied on like, systems of shame and all kinds of other things that kept us in line, right, that may not have been the most nourishing, but maybe did the trick, right? And I would be willing to bet that if I gave all of you an executive functioning test right now, which I do to all of my students when they come in and I make their parents take them, that you would be like, oh yeah, I'm not so great at that. But the great thing is that interventions work. They work really well. And according to the Center for the Developing Child at Harvard University, the research is enough now to support early interventions, especially in populations that are at risk for executive functioning development, to train teachers how to help kids build those three core capacities there: cognitive flexibility, working memory, and inhibitory control. Because those are the three baseline building blocks for a healthy cognition throughout your life. So what can you do? Think basic and consistent. It's not hard, it's not rocket science, we'll keep it simple. Okay, so here are 10 healthy ways to support executive functioning in everyone, because chances are you can make some improvements too. And thankfully the brain is an adaptable organ. I love that image because if you can think of the brain as a circuit board or as a house, what you want to do is, there's a saying, the neurons that fire together wire together. So if you have positive choices, positive actions that result in positive results, you've now created a nice strong connection in your brain that's there, right? And all you have to do is just keep
keep strengthening it by repeating that one action, and you are creating brain growth. That's really that simple. Consistency and ease, making it easy to incorporate it into your daily life. Okay, number 10, we're going backwards, like Jay Redman. Get moving. So you probably already know this, but kids sit so much today, especially in school. I can guarantee that kids today are sitting an hour or more than you did when you were in school. Guaranteed. And a huge part of what they need through movement is to build core strength. Core strength happens from climbing, from jumping, from balancing. And what one of the problems that we see in classrooms with ADD or ADHD, and I'm putting those in quotes because I know that those are valid diagnoses, I think they are overdiagnosed, and the research shows that a lot of those challenges, those attention challenges, could be addressed through executive functioning support and movement. So, oh, go back.
Now you're waving the fingers.
Sorry. We all know already that exercise is good for you, but it's really particularly good for cognitive functioning, for helping build those brain connections, for mood control, which I don't know if anybody knows a teenager who needs mood control, and self-esteem. And here's your takeaway, the easiest way to get moving with kids, and I've not yet found a single kid of any age who didn't meet me on the field when I wanted to play catch. They love it. Plus, you get the bilateral right-left hemisphere stuff going, the target and all of that. Plus, they get that feeling of success. How good you feel when you catch something? Everybody loves to catch something. You're saying, yes! Okay, so success. So think about that. Play catch with the next kid. If you don't know what to say, don't say anything. Play catch. Okay. Rules, rituals, and routines. Kids feel safest when they know the expectations and feel connected. The three R's, rules, rituals, and routines, really form a baseline for safety for kids. It's what works great about public school. The rules are clear, right? They provide everybody with a feeling of safety. Routines are predictable. Our brains love predictability. When you can increase the predictability in a child's life, you make it easier for them to learn, period. So whether that's at school, at home, at church, wherever you are, when predictability is present, kids are able to learn better. And rituals, those connect us to the deeper meanings, the things we do here, right? Story for all ages, lighting the chalice. These bring in the kind of archetypal, deeper meanings to our lives beyond just our cognitive. So the takeaway there is to make time for check-ins, a family dinner, a weekly meeting, special activities, whether it's like you pick your grandchild up once a month and you take them for ice cream and you ask them questions, whatever it is. But incorporating rules, rituals, and routines and paying attention to those in your interactions with kids builds their executive function. Think out loud. Okay, so this is one of the most basic tools in any teacher's toolbox is to think aloud. So when we model our internal dialogue to children, we give them the tools to create and maintain our own internal compass. So, and as they age, teaching by thinking aloud is less intrusive to their developing autonomy. I mean, you've all had interactions with teenagers where they just don't want you to talk. I'm talking to myself. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking aloud to myself. I can talk to myself whenever I want. I've said that multiple times. out there, for example, last week we had two children that both wanted to play with the same toy. I used to think aloud, right? Man, I've been there before. I know that I've been in a position of wanting to play with something that somebody else has played with. What did I do? I think I maybe asked them if I could play with it or asked them when I could have my turn. I'm not even talking to them. They're over there. I'm not even looking at them, honestly. I'm just like, I'm the crazy person who's just talking out loud. I am functioning as a fully functioning frontal lobe in their presence. I'm hoping that they'll pick up on something. And they did. They did. They worked it out. So talk to yourself out loud. Whatever's going on up here, share your bounty out loud. Okay. Nourishness, so you need to know. Kids are always hungry, especially if you've just fed them and gone to a new place. Especially if that place is a home, somebody else's home. Something about going through somebody else's door really triggers the hunger response in children. blood sugar dips, obviously they aren't good for anybody. If you want to think of protein and complex carbs, I have, all of many of you know Ivy, She was almost 11 years old, and it still catches me by surprise when she's being a total hellion. I will try everything in my power, and then all of a sudden I'll be like, wait, I'm a girl over. And everything changes, right? Keep putting all the bars in your purse, in your car, in your pocket. All the bars everywhere for everybody. Just buy them every time you go to the store. Put them in your car. Give them to children on the street. Don't ask them about allergies. Okay, but feed them because they're always hungry. Yeah. Next. Being outside at our old, soon-to-be new home. This is a big part of the reason why I have invested so much time in the outdoor classroom. Kids just don't get outside enough. They're not getting outside enough at school, and families are busy. We live in the tundra, so you know there's whole periods of the year where maybe we don't want to go outside. But the thing to remember is, with the proper gear and the right attitude, the outdoors is almost always accessible, and fresh air is so good for just clearing their brains, clearing their moods, and additionally, here, pro tip. When you want to talk to a kid about something, you almost always get a better response if you're talking to them like this, if they're over here. If you try and come at them like this, you're going to get major shutdown. Generally, right? But if you can incorporate movement, especially bilateral movement, and no eye contact, you're going to get a different level of conversation from them than you would if you do the whole, and your name is, with the microphone approach. So. Nature, right? Get out in nature as much as you can. They love it, and they're going to value you for making the time and making that accessible to them. Be quiet. This is when you're not talking loud, obviously. but model the ability to be still and do nothing. And show with your whole presence that this moment is really the only moment that is. We can spend a lot of time, and kids do, spend a lot of time worrying about things that have already happened, worrying about things that are going to happen soon. So if any way that any mindful practice that you have in your life, whether that's knitting or building or some kind of quiet hobby, something that allows you to be fully immersed in one thing that is present right now, that is so good for their inhibitory control. It's very good activity to build inhibitory control. And emotional flexibility. So play the quiet game, figure out how to sell it. If you figure out how to sell it, you can share with me. I've never been able to sell the quiet game. I'm gonna play the quiet game. being outside helps in the quiet game. Compliment, okay, so taking the time to truly witness the kid in front of you and give them the gift of an honest and sincere compliment creates a mirror for them to see themselves more clearly, and it's a great way to build vocabulary, which is important. Vocabulary is a great thing that they need to be building early. So this involves really paying attention, right? And paying attention enough that you're complimenting them on something that's meaningful to them. So, you know, we've all done that. Oh, I love the way you're sitting so still and quiet. I like it when you're still and quiet. There, you know, right? I like the way you just reached over and handed him that napkin. That was really helpful, right? Or, oh, I saw you hear him say he was feeling left out and you included him. That was really thoughtful. That kind of stuff. I saw blank, that was blank, is a great, like, blanket statement to follow. I saw you blank, right? We're not saying that was really good or good job. We don't want to train them to meet our expectations. We want to say things like, I saw you blank, that was blank, right? I saw this action, and that action was this. And that feeling, that thoughtfulness, that caring, that kindness, that's valuable, right? So it's giving them the extrinsic motivation, or the intrinsic motivation, sorry, rather than the extrinsic motivation. So they know what it feels like to be kind. Somebody just told me I'm kind. I like the way that feels. That's intrinsic motivation. Rather than, good job, oh, they like when I do that. That's extrinsic motivation. Does that make sense? Okay. Connect meaningfully. So this has been transformative in my work as a teacher and also as a parent. Some of you may have read Gary Chapman's book, Five Love Languages. it's a great book, I highly recommend it. But if you can't or don't want to read that book, there's plenty of online resources, but there are five main love languages according to Mr. Chapman, and they are quality time, physical touch, words of affirmation, acts of service, or thoughtful gifts. And you will probably have your own love language, right? The things that make you feel loved. Maybe you're the kind of person that when somebody comes out of their way to say, I really appreciate what you did yesterday, that really made my life a lot easier. You feel that, right, on a physical level. That would be words of affirmation. Or like me, if somebody were to wash the dishes without being asked, without me having to do it, all of a sudden that person is, yeah, what do you want, donut? What do you want? I will give you anything. I want to highlight that behavior and have it continue as much as possible. I'm a big acts of service person. My daughter is physical touch, and I'm not a very physical touch person. So knowing that she's a physical touch person helps me remember that I have to make a concerted effort to. It's not that I don't love her. I'm just, that's not my love language, right? So pulling her into my lap, touching her when I walk by, rubbing her hair, all of those things make a difference. When we're beginning to get disconnected, and I know that we're beginning to get disconnected because she's starting to act up, I'm starting to feel frustrated, things aren't working, it's very helpful for me to go back to this. My son is quality time. Right? So know yourself, know your kids, and you can kind of, you know, you can test them all out. You can't, I'd like you to take this quiz. You know, you don't want to do that to every kid you come into contact with, but you can start to really parse out what's going to make them feel loved and just pay attention. So the takeaway from that is to differentiate. Don't treat all kids the same, right? They're all different, and there's different ways to their hearts. Okay, this is the last one. Learn, and I'm sure you love to say this, you have to listen in order to learn. But when I say learn, I do not mean go up to the nearest kid and say, what did you learn in school today? And have them teach you something. Okay, what I mean is listen without agenda. Just really listen to what they're saying without the desire to steer or direct or instruct, right? And to keep in mind that kids have wisdom that we have forgotten because our frontal lobes are fully online, because we are planning, prioritizing, making lists, setting goals. We've got all these things that have to be done. We have forgotten what it's like to live in our living system. And that's where kids are living, right? A lot of the time. How does it feel? How do I feel? What do I like? What do I not like? And I have found that when I can remove my agenda from whatever experience I'm having with a child, I am more open to really hearing what it is that they're trying to say with their limited vocabulary and their limited cognitive function. They're communicating in a way I have to come down and be in that same space in order to really hear it. So the takeaway is to get over yourself. You know, everybody's a teacher, and yes, you have amazing things to teach, but they also have something to teach you. And if you can remember that and live that, you're going to have a completely transform the way that you interact with them. I don't know what's next.
Oh, there's another one? Okay. Oops.
Okay, so if you're thinking, oh, that's great and good, but I don't really know a whole lot of kids. Hey, there's kids out there. There's a whole bunch of kids out there. Okay, all kids are everywhere, but there are some right outside those doors. Okay, and now we have really arrived at the flood. Which is, one more quick? Haha. Okay, so.
This one too
the
far.
Thing I take, the thing I take most seriously about my role here as an educator, and the thing I value the most, is that I get to create a learning experience that is not driven by assessment, that is not driven by objectives, that is solely driven by student experience, right? My highest aim is that they want to come here. But then they want to come here and they find value when they are here. And they consistently tell us, friends, if you were at transition ceremony service, they consistently tell us that the thing they remember more than anything is their interaction with different adults and the weird things that they do. It's not about the curriculum. It's not about the materials that we offer them. It's about the people and the human connections. You probably heard all those kids say that Carl, what was it, throwing M&Ms at them? Was the most memorable thing for some of those kids. You know, chucking M&Ms. In And I did say play catch, didn't I? Okay, so it really is really simple. Your voice, your presence, your wisdom, your experience, they all matter. And they will not get passed on without effort. And the reality is that what I take most seriously about being in this role is I want to make it accessible for anybody. If you want to come once a year, come once a year. You just want them to see your face? You want to sit there and color? Come in color, right? If you want to teach, if you want to bring in your Bibles, bring them here. If you want to bring in a huge stack of Bibles and let them look through Bibles. When Karen told me that that was something that they loved, I was like, really? Like, I wouldn't have thought looking at a bunch of Bibles would be something that kids would be into, but they were into it, right? Make no assumptions, because we got all kinds of weirdos out there. And everything can find a place, okay? So, let me say that in the time that I've been here, the 5 years that I've been here, the volunteer pool has really dwindled to the point where I have maybe 4 main people that I can call on for interaction with these kids. And in the past, it was a big commitment to sign up for a year-long curriculum with a specific age group, but this workshop model that we have implemented makes that not true anymore. Okay, so for instance, one thing that kids have asked about is learning how to sew little memory blankets for Alzheimer's patients. That's sewing skills. I know a lot of you out there have sewing skills. There's cutting, right? Organizing, sorting, all kinds of things. Carl was taking apart toasters with them last year. Jeremy came and made laser pointers in Altoid tins. And some of you may be saying, how does this fit into a UU program? And I will tell you that what I believe to be true more than anything is that a UURE program is about learning how to live in the world and learning how to learning who you are, learning what's okay and what's not okay, and forming relationships with people who are different than you. And we cannot continue to do this top-down teaching where we decide what's important. We need to show up and interact and see what comes up as important and follow those breadcrumbs. So, there's one more? Surveys are coming. So on the website now, on the volunteer page, I have a Google form. It is only 4 questions. I went through it myself. It took me less than 5 minutes. And it just, I will tell you that filling out the Google form does not constitute a binding I'm not going to hunt you down, email you, call, and maybe email you. But if you say no, I'm going to say, okay, that's great, right? But when you fill out that form and you tell me, like, look, I really don't like little kids, I'm not going to be mad at you about that. I'd rather work with older kids. I can only do this once a month. I can only do this on Nifty Gifty or at Halloween parties. Or these are the things I'm interested in. There's a whole list of things where you'd be like, yeah, I like that. Yeah, no, no, yeah, no. Okay, 4 questions. If I take that, put it into a Google spreadsheet, which then shows I can sort. Like, I need a workshop in November for kids who are interested in sewing. Kids are asking me about sewing. I sort the Google sheet. Oh, look at this person is interested in sewing. I contact them. Are you interested in coming to sew with us on these dates? Yes, no. And if you say yes and then you can't, I have a whole list of people who are willing to just show up last minute and do whatever, okay? So there is a place for everybody, and we need you. We need you. next. I didn't know from my hands, I don't know how I'm doing, thank you.
And they're from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. today. The function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. And now you may greet your